This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. I went to the ALA Midwinter Conference this year and spoke with a few librarians about positive steps that libraries can take moving into uncertain times. My guests are Scott Walter, Sarah Houghton, and Andromeda Yelton. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from the University of South Carolina School of Library and Information Science and listeners like you. I'm at the ALA Midwinter Conference with Scott Walter, who's a university librarian at DePaul University in Illinois, and he is a candidate for ALA president this year. And in a future episode, we'll hear a longer discussion with Scott and Loida and Terry to get their more broad views on ALA and the vision that they want to bring. But Scott, I wanted to ask, what made you want to run for president? Because you decided to jump in a little bit later as a petition candidate. Was there anything in particular that prompted you to want to jump in?
Well, I think the thing that caused me to jump into the race, and as you said, I jumped into the race fairly late, and I jumped into the race in reaction to broader issues in U.S. politics. Right. Let me put it that way. I joined the race after the presidential election was decided in November. And I joined the race because in the weeks following the presidential election, like many people, I think, I was really searching to find a way, to find the best way to make a difference in a drastically changed political environment. And I knew from my own life in Chicago, seeing the sorts of actions and activities that people were being involved in, that people were being asked to take part in, and that were beginning to come to me as being relevant to my own life, whether it was my life in libraries, my life in public schools, my life in the community. And it seemed to me that ALA had a very important role to play. As a national organization, and it had an important role to play, especially given the challenges of the new U.S. administration to some of our core values around equity, around freedom of information, freedom of speech, and the general concept of the public good. And it felt to me that ALA had not positioned itself, did not seem to wish to position itself in a more action-oriented fashion, given this new reality. And I think that's important. I think it's important for ALA, I think it's important for our community, and I think it's important as we move forward over the next few years in thinking about how people make a choice about what communities to make their investment in. How will you invest your time? How will you invest your resources? How will you invest your passion over the next few years in order to make a difference to the things that matter to you? That is the question that I really came to grapple with over the last few months, and I think it's one that's important for this association to grapple with if we are going to continue to bring in new members, to retain members, and to really give them a platform for doing work that needs to be done.
And it's sort of, at this point, I mean, ALA at this point does a good job at what they are doing, of having like the, I don't know, the feel-good campaign kind of thing of the transforming libraries, which is a good campaign in maybe a different world. If we were living in a different reality, I think everybody would be happy kind of with the way the thing that was going if things had changed and turned out differently. So now it's sort of not only the, I'm blanking on the term, not my ALA kind of hashtag that's going around Twitter and the Operation 451 thing that Sarah Houghton and Andy Woodward put together and have kind of growing into a movement. It seems like this is a time for a little more activism than ALA generally does in the past. Does that kind of jibe with what you've been thinking?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I've struggled with the more commonly used term in ALA, which is advocacy. Now, don't get me wrong. I think a Transforming Libraries campaign is great. And we've adopted it at DePaul, and I think we've moved it in a direction that allows us to think more creatively about how we advocate in the academic environment. All that is true. It's not enough. And I think you're absolutely right when you say we seem to be in a mindset that may have worked very effectively over the last 8 years, may have worked very effectively over the last 20 years. But it feels to me that we are in a new world, that the challenges to the things that we believe in, the things that brought us into this profession, will be challenged in the coming days in a way that I know I have never experienced in my lifetime. And ALA, as a professional association, I think does need to reposition itself to move into a more action-oriented environment and to make common cause with other groups, both at the national level and at the grassroots level, to identify those challenges, to meet those challenges, and to take action that will make a difference. It's that commitment that I think will not only make a difference locally and nationally, but will energize our membership and our potential membership so that when people think about ALA, that they are thinking about campaigns that act strategically in collaboration with others to address those issues that we care most about. As a platform for mobilizing action, who better than librarians to bring those skills, the skills and the mindset of bringing people together, of sharing information, of disseminating information, of teaching. These are all things that we are rooted in right at the basis of our work. So even though you're right, it does take time for an organization the size of an ALA to move. We can begin work, I think, by immediately identifying our core commitments to social justice, to democracy, to the public good, articulating action areas that are related to those, and beginning to build those partnerships nationally and locally that will allow us to identify issues as effectively as we have for years identified issues related to censorship or freedom of speech, and work just as actively to begin mobilizing people locally to defend those rights. The other thing that I think ALA can begin to do immediately is to begin to think very creatively about the relationship between National ALA and the ALA chapters. More and more of my colleagues, when I speak to them about where they choose to invest their time, where they choose to invest their energy, they talk about their work in the chapters. They talk about local networks and state networks, because those are the networks that allow them to engage issues at home, where it will make a difference to their lives and the lives of their communities. That is something that ALA has always been committed to, but I think, again, in this new environment, we may want to rethink that. How do we energize that engagement? How do we turn that national network of state-level groups into a more action-oriented operation that will allow us to work with other state-level groups to begin to lobby for these changes?
Well, like I said, we'll have a more in-depth conversation later, I think, in a later episode. But I wanted to kind of ask, then step back for this conference. Is there anything in particular you're looking forward to seeing later on in the week or doing in particular? I know you're going to have a lot of campaigning stuff to do, but is there anything in particular else that you're looking forward to doing this weekend?
Mostly, as you say, I'll be in various meetings introducing myself and giving the 5-minute pitch as to why my candidacy may be different than that of my colleagues. All three of the candidates are wonderful people. They are great ALA advocates. They are people who have shown that they can do the work to bring people together and to move us forward as an association, but we all will spend some time trying to distinguish one from the other. It leaves very little time. The best part of campaigning is talking with people. The best part of campaigning at the ALA level is being able to meet with people from different parts of the association that you might normally not interact with because of your own special focus. So I'm looking forward to that, as always. And I'm looking forward to one of the few programs that I will be able to get to will be in the symposium on the future of libraries. I'm blocked out time to make sure I see Emily Drabinski give her talk on the future of library labor, because that, I think, a very clear example of how some broader issues in the political world and the economic world are affecting the professional lives of librarians. And that, I think, is something that ALA needs to grapple with a little bit more effectively, not just impact on professional issues, but the way in which those professional issues manifest themselves in people's lives. ALA is a membership association. We all have real lives. And I think ALA can spend some more time thinking about what that means.
So the last thing I'm going to ask you is, we're kind of sitting here in the uncommon, so I'm going to ask you kind of what's something that I'm just looking at. There's a board over here that says, "Libraries defend your privacy because blank." How do you fill in that blank?
Today, I guess I would say libraries defend your privacy because so few other organizations are willing to do that. This is one of the areas, privacy, surveillance. This is a real political issue that speaks to something that maybe prior to this was more of a professional issue. We have always, as librarians, focused on privacy and confidentiality and freedom of inquiry. But certainly over the last 15, 20 years, what had been a professional commitment has grown into a much more national and even global concern. And we know that not every organization and not every body within American politics has the deep commitment to protecting your privacy and, more importantly, teaching you how to protect your privacy as librarians do. So I think libraries and librarians protect your privacy because it's worth protecting. And especially now, it's important to protect it. And it is something that we have decades, if not centuries, of being committed to.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
All right, I'm sitting here with Sarah Houghton, the director at the San Rafael Public Library in California. And Sarah, we just talked about this briefly, that it's been more than 5 years since the last time you were on, and almost 100 episodes ago.
Wow.
So you were very gracious to be one of the early guests. I think you were on number 6 or 7 or something.
It was early, yeah.
This will be 102. So.
Alrighty then.
It's been a while.
Thank you for having me back.
So what have you been up to in the meantime? The last time, I believe you were an assistant director over at San Jose.
If I was an assistant director, then I would have already been at San Rafael. But that was only brief. I was only an assistant director for 9 months. Our director left. I was appointed acting director and then selected as the actual director after a recruitment about 6 months after that. So I've been director for 5 years-ish. And we've passed a parcel tax measure that's a third of our budget, so that was a big deal. We're midway through a new library facilities project, which is a big deal. So, yeah, I've been busy.
And didn't you just pass a thing where you got rid of fines?
We got rid of fines for children.
Kids, yeah.
We tried to get rid of fines for adults, and our city council turned that down.
I wanted to have you on here in midwinter just to mostly talk about initiative, is that the right word for it, that you're doing, that you started with Andy Woodworth, and I wouldn't say it's just the two of you because you wanted to make it a big movement for everybody to join into, called Operation 451. Can you talk about what was the impetus behind that?
We were just chatting online one night, and we're talking about kind of what we both were hearing, which was a lot of library workers saying they wanted to do something, but not knowing what to do. And then also a lot of library workers talking about the limitations on political activity at work and how there was a lot of that they wanted to do that they could not do in their roles as a librarian or an administrator or whatever. So we started thinking of creating something that was a positive statement of what libraries and librarians stand for, not a position against something, not a statement against anyone, but this is what our profession does. This is what all of us put our work day into every single day we work, and what a lot of us believe at the core of our beings, that this is what we are, who we are. And Andy came up with the 451 idea, just the whole Ray Bradbury thing. And then back and forth, it was like, okay, let's figure out another meaning for the 451. And what it ended up with was the fourth and fifth elements of our articles of the Library Bill of Rights and then the First Amendment. And that definitely doesn't address all of the library ethics that are out there. It doesn't specifically call out privacy, for example, but that's still critical. What we'd really originally envisioned it as was just naming it as a thing, saying, you know, here's something positive that you can do. You can think about your ethics again. You can talk about them with your colleagues. You can reaffirm that you still uphold these ethics. Have fun with that. And really, that's where we were going to leave it. And then people were, why don't you have swag?
Right.
It's like, oh, swag, what? So we didn't want to do, you know, t-shirts and aprons and thongs. So we did the little lapel pins. And I thought we'd sell like 20, and we've sold quite a bit more than that, which is great because all the money is going to the Freedom to Read Foundation. So at this point, we've had so many people say, okay, what's next after Election Day, that we're starting to think about what we're going to do in the months following. So we're looking at this point at planning out a series of kind of action days or call to action around already established ALA or other organization type themed weeks or months or days, and using that as a way to crystallize people's energy about their ethics and what they do every day. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Okay. And I think the timing-wise, I think it kind of came in reaction to, well, number one, the election, the results of the election, and then not just that in particular, but maybe ALA's initial reaction to that, of the press releases that all came out from the Washington office that made it sound like, oh, well, this is just business as usual, so let's just go ahead and work with the new administration. And
I've heard mixed narratives from different elements of ALA on what went behind the press releases and who approved them and who didn't, who vetted them, who didn't. I've never heard one even vaguely consistent narrative, and that is in and of itself a little distressing to me as a member.
Right.
I think the order of events was election. You know, people are getting upset in general because of their personal politics, not because of work.
Right.
ALA's response, people were getting upset about ALA's response because I personally, my feeling was that it did not jive with our professional ethics. The statements that came out, it wasn't a problem that it didn't jive with my personal ethics. It did not jive with what we state our professional ethics are. And endorsing a particular administration's platform, or saying, you know, we uphold the same values you do, I think is highly problematic regardless of whether it's a left-wing or right-wing candidate, if it's someone that is going to, you know, pass legislation or work toward things that ALA endorses or not. I still think it's problematic to use that kind of language to describe how ALA feels about a particular incoming administration. That was my personal feeling, and I think I've heard it characterized as, oh, it's just the young members, or it's just the millennials who are pissed. And I'm a solid middle-of-the-road Gen Xer, and I'm pissed.
Yep.
And I've seen several transitions of administrations through ALA. I've never seen anything like this, and not just because of the change in administration, but I've never seen anything like this in terms of ALA's reaction and the language that they chose. And so I... yeah, have some major issues with that. And I think what 451 came out of was listening to the whole library world as a whole react to that. So it's kind of a snowball effect. And Andy and I, again, wanted to do something positive. We didn't want to say something negative, you know, this is wrong. We wanted to say, no, let's restate why we're doing this in the first place. Restate the role we play for our communities in being a place that's open to all, being a place that's going to protect your privacy, being a place that's going to protect your right to access the information you want. And that's really what 451 is all about. And so I think both of us have been a little surprised by how interested people are and a little bit panicky about the level of response people are expecting from us. You know, this was just a random late night idea that sounded, that sounds cool. That'll give some people something positive to think about.
That
URL's available. Right. We did go through a few. And so now it's gotten to be something where we're looking at literally a full 12 months of trying to do work. And again, just ask people to think about and positively reaffirm in their workplaces why we all do what we do every day. So I think for me, that gives me hope, thinking there's a year's worth of work ahead where I get to do positive things and think about positive things. And I think that's what a lot of other people are grasping for right now, is something to do, something positive to do, not something negative. So I hope it can do that for people. And if it doesn't, just, you know that it was a random late night brainstorm and it was never intended to be this extensive, but I'm so happy that it has worked out so well, and I know Andy is too.
Yeah, and I think it does, like you said, came out of an idea of people wanting to do something, and they're waiting to see maybe a reaction. And the reaction of ALA is sort of not. I should say the action of ALA is never, let's go out there and do a lot of action. It's always a slow moving, huge organization. So people want to do things now and make the world a better place. And so you guys are offering that. So can you give some ideas of what some suggestions you have now that people can do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think talking about your coworkers about ethics is important. We've been doing a kind of going through the Bill of Rights one item per week with our staff and really talking about what it means, explaining it, giving examples. And that's been really helpful, particularly for people who have been in the profession for a long time and maybe haven't looked at this stuff since library school. And also for library staff who are not degreed, people who, you know, came to work with us after working at a bookstore and aren't necessarily familiar with these ethics. So that's been really helpful. So I think starting those conversations is good on a small scale, a big scale, whatever you can do in your organization. I think donating to the Freedom to Read Foundation is always a good idea. That money is going to go to a very good place. That's going to defend very good things. Partnering with other organizations that stand up for some of the things that our ethics do, I think, is a good idea. And depending on which ethic we're talking about, those organizations are going to be different ones. Putting your own time behind different, whether it's legislative efforts or whatever. If it strikes you as this supports my professional ethics, that's something you can absolutely do. And I think, to me, the biggest thing is just continuing the conversation among the profession, whether it's at a national conference like this or in the staff room at your library. I think we don't talk about what we do and why we do it often enough. We get so caught up with the day-to-day. So I hope this engenders kind of a reboot of making ethics the cool thing to talk about over the lunchroom table.
Okay, well, I want to wrap up with you the same way I wrapped up. I talked with Scott Walter earlier, and I asked him the same thing, because we were sitting in the same area, which is the Uncommons Midwinter. On the wall over there, it says, "Libraries defend your privacy because blank." How do you fill in that blank?
It's our job.
I will say that was very close to what his response was.
It's what we promised to do when we got our degrees, because it's your right. There's a lot of becauses. Yeah, there's a lot of good answers to that question.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. I am here with Andromeda Yelton, the president of LEDA, president-elect of LEDA. I knew there was something there. The president-elect of LEDA. And I wanted to ask, in terms of what LEDA's doing with the profession and what you are thinking of planning for next year, I guess, when you take over as president at annual, what kind of things do you see that LEDA can do to help the profession move forward in a kind of positive way to help our patrons and help the profession even? So
a big thing I'm excited about right now is our patron privacy interest group just created a set of really concrete actionable guidelines that libraries of all sizes can use to implement the ALA Intellectual Freedom Committee's guidelines on patron privacy. So the board just approved those literally 2 days ago, but check out LEDA's website and social media for links to those to find out what you can do to safeguard patron privacy in your library.
And LEDA provides bacon, I believe, that I heard at this conference.
Yes, for those of you who can come to conference, which I know is not everybody, LEDA Town Meeting, which we just had this morning, does provide bacon as well as other tasty things that are suitable for vegetarians. And we get together and we talk, because the best thing about LEDA is really its members and the networking and not being alone in what you do as a technologist.
And another thing I've been asking a lot of people at the conference is kind of privacy is a big message going around. How do you sort of personally, and how do you feel LEDA can contribute to showing the importance of protecting privacy in libraries.
So I think it's important for people to know that privacy is how we implement a lot of the things that are in our code of ethics. When we talk about everyone having the freedom to read and every reader their book and protecting people's freedom and confidentiality, if people feel surveilled, it changes their behavior and it prevents them from learning and engaging as libraries are supposed to be safe spaces for. And so Lita's ability to articulate what that means technologically and how you protect privacy when people are reading things online and engaging online, I think is a special way that we can contribute and help people protect their ethics and protect people in their communities who may be vulnerable based on their interests.
Is there anything else that's come out of the conference that's sort of excited you about moving forward into the next 6 months, year?
So there was a town meeting for ALA Council yesterday, which was on Facebook Live. American Libraries put it on Facebook Live, so you can check it out if you weren't here, where there was a lot of points of view articulated as to how ALA should be acting in these uncertain times, as council phrased them. So a lot of people had a lot of different points of view as to what it means to be a library association and what our values should be today. And I think that's worth listening to.
And I believe the town hall was basically a time for members to get their voices out, but it wasn't really, so leadership didn't actually respond to what was said. Is that correct? I couldn't make it to the town hall, but it was more of a way to get the word out, and then they'll absorb that and maybe and sort of figure out a way to respond.
Yeah, it was open to all members, not just council, and so a lot of people came up and spoke, and there weren't direct responses at the time, but I've certainly had members of ALA leadership come up to me afterward to discuss the things I said, so I know that people were listening, and there is a lot of discussion, so I'm interested in seeing what kinds of potential follow-up actions come out of that.
Yeah, I think people are looking for ways to have positive action to move forward into this, as you said, uncertain times. All right, well, thanks a lot, Andromeda.
Thanks, Steve.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta, with support from the University of South Carolina School of Library and Information Science, and from listeners like you. Find out how you can help support the show by going to circulatingideas.com and clicking on support. You can help others find the show by rating and reviewing the show on iTunes, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. You can follow the show on Twitter @CircIdeas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening, and keep circulating your ideas.